Good morning.
Greetings.
Good morning, CK.
Howdy.
And everyone else who's lurking in the shadows. Today is June 30th, 2021. This is episode 215.
Woo, that's a good number.
Yeah, and this is a day we give thanks to Odin because it's Odin's day.
That's right.
Praise be the one-eyed one.
Yes. And so Mark shaved in honor of Odin.
As one does.
Not me.
No, because you've always been more into Freya. No, I know. I did shave because I was planning on doing some video recording stuff, and I realized having a blue beard might not be what I was going for, so I shaved.
Just looks unprofessional.
Yeah, you know how people know how much that I prioritize professionalism.
Yeah, the blue beard wouldn't go with your three-piece suit.
That's right. Actually, I was going to wear just a regular two-piece suit. Not three-piece. The vest was too pretentious. But I did have a bow tie in mind.
Okay.
Or a cummerbund.
That
should be part of regular casual wear, because having a sash around the middle is quite formal.
Yes. Let's introduce ourselves. Since people might not recognize you without your beard.
That's right. I'm Mark Van Steenwyck, the unbearded. I direct this Center for Prophetic Imagination.
And I'm Daniel Wolpert. I direct Mike at the Minnesota Institute of Contemplation and Healing. And right, guys, if you don't feel like plucking out your eye, you shave your beard instead.
Yeah, the thing is, you have to give up something to Mimir and to his well so that you can drink from Urd's well and gain foresight and magic knowledge, according to the legends. It's a Norse mythology, dude.
Yeah. So, all right. So we're talking about church. That's what we're talking about this week. We are not talking about Norse mythology or robot birds, but had to just throw that in. I was realizing we haven't had Bubo say hi recently. So
there he is.
Bubo is our leader.
Is wise among the robot birds.
Yes. So the subject of church, and Ellen sent us like 5,000 memes. And we have picked one.
Yeah. Out of that. A framing. You've probably seen a version of this meme before.
I love that guy.
Crazy dude from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. It says, "Six days, creation is literal. But rich man not entering heaven is allegorical." I mean, right. There's lots of memes that are on this idea, but it's just somehow it's selective fundamentalism.
Yeah.
And I think it's worth, you know, before taking the picture away, just noticing like, what is it? We all know kind of, why is it that fundamentalists will clamp down on something like 6-day creationism as something, as a hill to die on, but treat the provocative ethical statements of Jesus as some sort of trick or something, usually trying to make you feel really, really shitty, knowing that you cannot live up to the gospel, so that you have to cling to him as a savior. So they don't treat it in the category of doctrine the same way that something like 6-day creation or biblical inerrancy. And that actually has a lot to do with how we understand the church. What the church is, theoretically. So, you know, like, is the church primarily a sort of receptacle, like a vase that you fill with doctrinal truth that must be protected, and that your goal as the church is to take this truth and pour it upon the world so that it might bear fruit? Like, this is kind of the idea. So it's a container of doctrinal truth. And then the entrance into the church is giving some sort of assent to that truth. Usually some emotion tied in it. You see the reality of how I am but a wretched sinner, but a worm in the presence of the Lord. Forgive me. Like that kind of thing. And then now you're in the church and you have to protect these truths. is it the Jesus-y thing about the rich man entering heaven is not just like a doctrinal statement. It's a changing your fundamental way of relating. Like, he never says rich people can't go to heaven. He says, hey, rich person, you want to come be a part of the kingdom of God? Sell everything you have and give it to the poor. There, the starting point is fundamentally reorienting your relationships with everybody.
Yeah.
Which is harder.
Yeah, so
it's harder.
Right. Which is a lot harder. And yeah. Right. So the another way of just talking about this or thinking about it is, how do we order our lives? Mm-hmm. And one of the things about that is that we actually don't really think about that much. No. Right? Because the way we order our lives is largely just given to us by our family, by our society, by school, by commercials, you know, all of these structures that we kind of wake up in the midst of, right? We just show up as little babies, and then we're like, ah, what's going on? Right. And so
why do I exist? And then the baby cries the first time. Is the first cry of every baby is a scream into the void of existential angst.
Yes. And after that, it's just asking for food or a diaper change.
Yep.
But so anyway, we don't really have to we don't really have to think about how we order our lives. That's just given to us, and we're told what to do. And then, you know, we sort of wake up sometime in our teenage years or early 20s or 30s or 40s, and we're just like, well, you know, this is what you do, right? You get a job, you know, have a partner, maybe have kids, you buy a house, you know, all the American-y things. And that's how you order your life. And then church is just this add-on. Right. So, well, I also go to church and I have a membership. And if you grow up in a church going family, you have what a friend of mine said. He said, I have this drug problem. Every Sunday I get drugged to church. You know, and so church is just an add-on into this whole way of life that is given to us, that in our society is controlled by this, you know, basically capitalist sort of way of functioning and being in the world. Now, what we like to propose is that that really is not church and what Jesus was talking about, and that's where this meme gets at, you know, that that what church is about is actually a fundamental reordering or a conscious reordering of what our life is, and that now we are ordering our life not around, you know, how much money am I making, do I have a good retirement account, blah, blah, blah. But now I'm ordering my life around my spiritual life. And that is what is then determining all of those social, economic, political relationships. And that's a very radical shift. That's a very radical shift. And, you know, that's why... you know, one of the stories I like to tell about this was the church that we were members at when I was at seminary, San Anselmo Presbyterian Church. And, you know, at the time there was this reasonably young pastor there who, you know, who people really liked. And, you know, everybody said was this great preacher. And he was always preaching these kind of social justice-y sermons. And, you know, talking about inequities, talking about, you know, the gospel calling us to do something different, blah, blah, blah. And every Sunday, you know, all these, and San Anselmo is a very, very wealthy community, one of the richest communities in the U.S. And every Sunday, all these people would file out of church. Oh, thank you, Pastor. Oh, it's a great, great sermon. It was really brilliant, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, they would nominate him for national preaching awards and blah, 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 all this stuff. And nothing ever changed, right? No, nobody ever changed their lives. Nobody ever did anything different. And eventually, one of the main reasons that he left that church was that he got so frustrated and tired of saying the same thing over and over again and nothing different happening. But that's what you get when church is just an add-on to this other way of life.
You know, and meanwhile, like, so, I don't know, over 15 years ago, it's my wife and I started an intentional community. And so we had, like, at one point we had a few community houses. There's like 20 members and like 10 guests, people who had usually been experiencing homelessness. We'd have Sunday gatherings where we combined sort of a Quaker sensibility around a full agape meal, type of Eucharistic meal, some conversations, sometimes like a more of a reflective sermon. We were doing activism and, you know, all the things, like trying to collect rainwater and do our own gardening, all the radical things. And continually and constantly, people would just act. When I try to say we were a church, they'd be like, you're not a church. You're not a real church. That's not a real church. And no theological categorization were we lacking a definition of church, but it was not people's assumption, because the whole orientation, as flawed as it was not around giving a sermon and singing and having traditional membership things. And even though we own property and we would meet in houses, in fact, we had the space for people who've never been there, which is most of the people listening. We had a two-story garage, and the second story was about a little larger than the shed room, right? Mm-hmm. And so we could sometimes fit up to 35 people. We actually had a wedding kind of up there. So it's small, but it was definitely, we treated it like a chapel. It was dedicated space. But because nothing looked conventionally like a church, people all the time would be dismissive of us, even though we were doing all the things churches did, plus all these reordering relationships. Mm-hmm. And it shows how much people, we've been conditioned into thinking that church is a very particular way, to the point mm-hmm. when something is more than a church, we dismiss it if it doesn't look church-like enough. Mm-hmm. It's kind of funny, but not yeah. funny, it's sad. Right. Because in my mind, if we would have dropped the singing and the talking part as a weekly phenomenon and done something else that was a little bit more, maybe we would have had just weekly silent contemplation and then once a month had a conversation roundtable, we wouldn't have been less church to me. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. You know, what do we do with that? Like every pastor in America that I've ever met who has wanted the church to be more of a lived expression has been frustrated when if they've ever been hired to work at a church.
Yep.
I mean, that's not even an exaggeration. It's just becomes frustrating because they yeah. realize that everyone is conditioned. And we have to ask, like, why is it that who does this current format of church and a set of dominant assumptions about church serve? Like if your everything is about doctrinal purity, even liberal mm-hmm. churches, it's about doctrinal purity. Particular understandings of budgets and ownership of buildings and stewardship concepts, all those things serve people in kind of ecclesial power, like bishops, or in a church that's more congregational, the membership of the church or the board. Mm-hmm. It's always kind of goes up. It's built almost intrinsically as a way to keep people from really living this stuff out.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the other thing that it used to serve, and this, I mean, as society has changed over the last 60, 70 years, this has changed somewhat. But the other thing that it used to serve was the capitalist, industrialist model of society, right? Because, you know, Sunday, nothing else was open on Sunday. So everybody, if you were a good citizen, you were a member of a church and you went to church. And what would happen is, you know, the women would cook in the kitchen And the men who were the business owners and the industrialists would hang out and talk business, right? And so the larger social order was maintained by this definition of who was a good member of society. And those were the people that would do business with each other, and if you weren't a good member of society and you didn't, belong to the right church or travel in the right social circle, then, you would lose out in the wider social order of things. So church membership, was basically like country club membership, right? And it served to distinguish who were the good and important citizens that would get the good fruits of the social order, which, again, if you listen to anything that Jesus said, it's kind of hilarious because he said the exact opposite of all those things. All
Well,
right, we finally have a couple comments.
yep. Kathleen writes, when I was younger, I really loved church liturgy. Now I view it as part of my magical thinking years. We should have a question. We should talk about liturgy somewhere in here. Like, what is, I mean, it literally means work of the people, which is always funny to me. CK writes, isn't that the point if you are a believer to change? So what's the point? It's like government. Nothing really changes, but yet we're supposed to be patriotic and have faith in these things, and yet it all seems antithetical. Yeah, and this is the part of the hard thing about this. Like, if I start getting really pushy, I guess, about the ethical Jesus stuff, a lot of people who've been traumatized within these church systems get a little anxious because, in their mind, the way church has functioned is a form of social control using guilt and shame. So if you, even if you're like breaking free from that, you're like, no, it's about like throwing off the yokes of oppression, being able to be present to one another, to having a righteous relationship to land and God so that we can go deeper into humans flourishing. And that means stop oppressing people. You say that, they'll be like, oh, you just said I need to stop oppressing people. Like, I don't even know where to start, and why are you making me feel ashamed and guilty? Because we're conditioned to feel ashamed and guilty. And so even this, I've this idea of like to change, transformation is at the core in my mind of what it means to be the church. But if you say, you know, come be a part of what we're doing so that you might be transformed, it's easy for people to hear that through this conditioning, this morality conditioning of I'm not good enough. Which is not really what that call to transformation is about. It's not saying you're not good enough. It's saying, come move more deeply into human flourishing in the way that our spirit has created us to be. And let's name these things that get in the way of that, push against them, and create space for the deep stuff. And it's hard even for people to get that message because of this toxic conditioning.
Well, and because a lot of what church and Christianity has been about is not about human flourishing, it's about like being miserable for the sake of the gospel. And so change is from, well, whatever my life is like now to something that's actually worse, which again is the exact opposite of what Jesus is talking about.
Partly because the gospel that's preached is almost entirely negative in the terms of like underneath your skin, you are a barbaric animal of lust and destruction who must learn the skills of self-restraint so that you don't become some sort of baby murdering rapist. Like,
Or
and then that's,
baby eating.
well, I mean, you murder the baby for, well, no, you'd
Well,
be
it
so.
could be.
And so, like, there's this sort of idea of self-restraint and self-control because we're villains underneath of it. And so, the idea of like human flourishing sounds like liberal bullshit to that sort of understanding. It doesn't even make sense. James writes, I serve a UMC church, that's United Methodist Church, that still has an American flag. And as a relic of the time when the church was about being a good citizen,
Well, and look, this is not just this is not a relic. I mean, there was I just saw this photo floating around you guys could look it up, of I believe it's First Baptist in Dallas, of the service this last Sunday, which was basically worshiping the United States Armed Forces.
Nice.
And it, you know, it's unbelievable. And the entire church and everybody is holding an American flag. The entire church is an American flag. They're talking about freedom, and they list all the branches of the army, the armed services. It's you know, they're worshiping something, but they're not worshiping God. And so you know, many churches still have the American flag. And you know, in a lot of parts of this country, church really is about God and country, and that's one word. And so yeah, that's very powerful in a lot of places.
You mean baby Jesus is an American?
Not only is
but he's watching Jesus, you masturbate.
And he's watching you masturbate, but he's not American. So.
That's a reference. That's not just something we just made up just now. That's a reference to an earlier episode where Dan found that written on a wall, for those who don't get the joke. Gus writes, Nadia Bowles Weber, who's a Lutheran pastor in Colorado, had a tweet the other day about how most pastors would have a harder time taking an American flag out of the church than the cross. The cross can go. It really isn't. It's not really this real sacred symbol to us. She suggested we should be writing liturgies for the removal of that crap.
Yeah. Well, and I took the American flag out of the front of the sanctuary in Crookston, and got an enormous amount of shit for that. And but I was just like, that's not going up front. And I'm sure it's back up there. I'm sure right after I left, it's probably back up there. But yeah, no, I mean, it's absolutely true.
I think it was a youth pastor, like one day was messaging me for advice because he had gotten in the habit of taking the American flag and hiding it in the church in different places, because he didn't feel like the place to destroy it or take it or anything like that. So he'd hide it, and then eventually somebody would find it and put it back. And then he's like, is this okay? Is it okay if I keep doing this? I'm like, yeah. I would probably do more than that, but okay. It's kind of a fun game of hide and seek. But it was so upsetting to people. Like, it's like that stage looks naked without those. Got to have the pulpit. You got to have that, the two flags, the weird Christian one, the American one.
Yeah, the Christian
like
flag.
Two old wooden chairs up there for some reason in every church, like the velvety wooden chairs. Like, I never understood that. No one ever sits in them.
Well, actually, there's this one church that I was in that we did sit in them, and man, they are uncomfortable. It's bad.
Nothing in church should feel comfortable, because you're there to weigh the own, like weigh the severity of your own sin. So it's very serious business. Yeah. Cheryl writes, is why we need more holistic education, mind, body, spirit, cosmic education too. Who am I? Why am I here? Are questions not beyond elementary school age people. Church will follow out under the night skies, out onto the red rocks, on top of mountains, into the forest. I mean, this
you're
is where
going,
like
you're going full pagan on us. It's awesome.
I mean, we forget, like, this isn't, this way we do church is not one of my favorite cults is the Bogomils, who were Eastern European. I think they were kind of killed out in the 8th century. I'm not exactly sure, but they didn't believe. They took it seriously when in the scriptures it talks about you shouldn't worship in anything made with human hands, like back when God was arguing with David about the temple. Mm-hmm. And so they would only worship outside. Mm-hmm. And we don't know much about beyond that, but for some reason that was threatening enough. They had to be heretized.
They had to be axed. Yeah. Well, and you know, one of the things that's very interesting to me, and I talk about this in Creation's Wisdom, my newest book, you know, if you go back and you start looking throughout the Bible, it's not just in the Hebrew Bible, there's all kinds of, you know, worshiping outside, piling up rocks, going up mountains. I mean, there's no forests really, so they're not in the forest. That's not the ecology. But You know, Jesus is behaving in very shamanistic kinds of ways. You know, he's putting mud on people's eyes. He's spitting on people. He's drawing on the ground. He's, you know, whispering in people's ears. He's doing all these kinds of things that are very, very, what now we would call nature-based, but in the time it was just like, this is just what you do.
It's just based.
Yeah, it's and right, as soon as you started building all these buildings, you know, and this is why there's this gigantic argument in the Hebrew scripture about building the temple, right? That you know, that is viewed as sort of this weird going backwards, right? God didn't want there to be a temple, and God didn't want there to be kings. And yet, you know, as soon as Christianity starts to become institutionalized, we basically immediately, you know, this is what people do, right? We created both those things. We created massive temples and we created kings. They were called popes and bishops. And so this is the human tendency that we're always doing that, that really is going against what the teachers of the spiritual life have always talked about. And it's this knee-jerk kind of habit that humanity seems to be stuck in. And we forget over and over and over again that it's really the dismantling of those power structures and learning to live and relate in a different way that is what is going to get us to a just and beloved society.
SJ writes, I think there's more going on sociologically with patriotism than what meets the eye. There's something more systemic happening that pastors can't seem to counteract. I think that's exactly true. There's a lot of layers to this, and people, again, in public discourse will talk about these patriotic folks as though they're dumb and that they're just listening to public radio and absorbing dumb things, and they just need to have their minds changed. And there's truth to that, but it is deeply systemic. There's been a coordinated effort of these folks and alliances that go really deep, and there's nothing comparable on the left exactly. Maybe.
And this is why I say it's this ancient impulse, right? That, I mean, we as people feel deeply insecure, and life is terrifying and unnerving. And we want security, and we want to be able to be alive, and we want to be able to reproduce, right? This is also the basic kind of biological imperative, right? We want to be able to reproduce, and we want our kids to be safe and healthy. And one of the ways that human beings figured out to do that was to band together into groups and then create this hierarchy where, you know, the sort of biggest and strongest people, you know, it was this weird trade, like, we'll kind of look after you, sort of, if you let us have all this power and beat up the bad guys, right? And, you know, and that's the basic argument in 1 Samuel. I mean, people are just like, you know, we want a king, we want a king, we want a king. And God's like, no, you don't want a king. A king is going to fuck you up. And people are like, no, we want a king. And it's that impulse to safety and security. And so, you know, this, you're absolutely right. This has been going on forever. And it is a very, very deep longing for assuaging our anxiety as we're confronted by the material world. And, you know, the spiritual life points to another approach to assuaging that anxiety, but it's much more radical and ephemeral, and at first it doesn't feel as secure.
Mm-hmm. Cheryl asks, what's the spitting about?
Well, you know, this is a very standard, if you look at what we call shamanic or indigenous healing practices, that's something that folks do all the time. And I think part of it is kind of shock value and, transmitting some sort of spirit, But you see it all across many, many cultures, where you have indigenous healers will do that. They will spit on people. Either that or they're trying to spread COVID. I don't know.
Yeah, it's like when Jesus spits into the dirt and makes mud and rubs it into a blind person's eyes. There is a lot of, I mean, you could probably maybe over dig into some symbolism there, but there is this, again, transferring of power, but then also like connecting with the earth.
Yep.
And then it's like, and there's a bit of theater to it. Like could Jesus have just been like, you're healed? Like, yeah, he did that sometimes. There's times where you don't see him putting stuff on people. But in this case, it definitely draws your attention at the very least. Gus writes, SJ, I mean, the pastor gets to make an argument one day a week. That's never going to be as powerful and informative as everything the American dominant culture throws at people. Advertising, just as one example, is always bigger business than church is ever going to be.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yep. Kathleen says, there's something wonderful about the idea of America. Unfortunately, we have never lived into the idea of a welcoming melting pot. I mean, there's a lot of great values that have been articulated by, as part of the American ethos, mixed with some not good stuff and some self-deception. But it is tragic that we can't live up to even some of the most modest of our noblest ideals, you know. Julia writes what Gus said. Yeah, like that's the part of the problem. Like what, with going back to the original framework for this episode, like what does it mean to, how do we order our lives?
Right.
And how do we, in our ordering of life, we have to recognize, or I think we should recognize the powerful formative forces around us all the time. Like, and we can downplay that because we tend to have rational choice theory about how, like we think that we're actually making rational choices based on having a fairly good grasp of all the relevant information, and we don't. And things are working on us even if we're unaware, like advertising affects us. It's like people don't wake up and think, I think I'm gonna privilege skinny bodies over fat bodies. Where does that come from? You don't ever have to choose that. You might instinctively do that. Who you're attracted to is largely is as much culturally conditioned as it is biologically driven. The things that you feel like a crappy loser and failure about, like the fact that so many of us who might even have enough to, we know we'll have enough to eat until we die, have housing, and still feel anxious and afraid. There's all that stuff is kind of done to us. And it's formed by these social systems. And really reorganizing, like unfortunately it has to start with a handful of people on a small level, trying to figure out how do we create a counter system and intentionally push back against these things. And that it is hard because it takes a lot of analysis plus deep discernment and a group of people willing to go take some risks, even though risks they shouldn't have to in a good world.
All right, we've got a few last minute comments here, and then we'll have to sign off for today.
Barbara says, interesting discussion. Thanks.
You're welcome. Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks for listening.
There's Lance. I haven't heard from Lance for a while. Hi, Lance. Adam Serwer, a writer for The Atlantic, has a new book out called The Cruelty is the Point, about all the outrageous, cruel things done in the Trump administration towards human beings. One of the points he makes is that that kind of cruelty is in the psyche of America, and the churches have not stood against it. But in the last few years, some of the churches have even lauded the previous administration policies. Seems to me that the church isn't doing its job if it's not trying to affect a, and it cuts off there. Comments over a certain length get clipped. So if you want to add more real quick, Lance, that'd be great. But yes, there is this, and why is that cruelty being embraced? Because again, the church is is like a vessel for truth that has to be protected against taint. And so if it takes cruelty to protect the gaze from like messing up our pure vessel of clean white water, like whatever, you know, all these things that we think of as a threat, cruelty towards them is can seem good if the overall goal is to defend the truth as they see it, which is gross. Bill has a link here. I'll just leave it up. But there's the self-awareness gap that non-Christian people really think about the church.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what that's about, but people can kind of look it up.
Yeah, sounds interesting. So, all right. Well, we've breezed through another half an hour. So thank you very much for all your comments, for listening, for signing on with us. And quite appropriate that coming up on 4th of July weekend, we will be back on Friday for our final episode before our summer break.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So we'll see you on Friday.
All right. Bye.